Human Origins by Robert C. Newman. A brief abstract. Here we sketch the biblical and evolutionary accounts of human origins. We deal with the question of whether the human genome is 98% the same as the chimp. We do a DNA calculation for the ape-human transition. We consider the question of how much junk DNA there is in the human genome, and then the question of where should Adam be placed in the fossil record of the various human-type fossils. So, let's have a look then. The biblical account. In Genesis 1, we are told that God made man, both male and female, in his own image, but without being given much further detail. In Genesis 2, we're told that in addition, God made the human male first from the dust of the earth and made the female later from the male's side. This pair, though created morally good, rebelled and brought disaster to themselves and to their offspring. The evolutionary account looks like this. The typical evolutionary picture of human origins is that mankind developed gradually from a whole population of apes over the course of millions of years. Thus, there never was an original pair, so that the fall of humans, if such ever happened, must have been something quite different. This account dominates education in the media, liberal Christendom, and is beginning to have influence in evangelical circles. Typical presentation looks kind of like this picture of a row of beings starting with the ape on the left and working their way up to modern man on the right, walking to the right. Relation of humans to primates. This picture shows a chart with "you are a primate" written on it. The human shown in a gray ellipse, and to the left, lemurs, tarsiers, South American monkeys, Old World monkeys, orangutans, chimpanzees, and then to the right, gorillas and gibbons. And from the bottom comes up a genealogical tree, if you like from the base of the hominins, and lemurs branching off to the left first, and then tarsiers, and then the South American monkeys and Old World monkeys, and then a branch going over to the remaining five, then with one going off to the gibbons, then just later a branch off to the orangutans, then off to the gorillas, and then off to the chimpanzees, and then up to the humans. Relation to other hominins. Hominin is the term that is now being used for the alleged ancestors of humans going back to the branch going off to the chimpanzee. So we have at the bottom the hominin ancestor, and then branching off at about 5 million years ago, the chimpanzee, and then to the right, the Ardipithecus ramidus, and then a branch going up the Australopithecus onamensis, and then Australopithecus afarensis, that's Lucy, and then a branch there, and a one side going off, left side going off to the Paranthropus branch, Paranthropus ethiopicus, Paranthropus robustus, Paranthropus boisei. Back last time I was doing much studying on humans, these were being called Australopithecus also, but now they're not. Off to the right, Australopithecus continues, Australopithecus gari, Australopithecus africanus, and then branching off above that, Homo habilis, then Homo erectus, then a branch going over to Homo neanderthalis and Homo sapiens. So the relation to the other hominins. Artist reconstructions, here's one of the more elaborate ones I've seen, which gives 12 pictures, starting with Sahelanthropus chadensis at 7 or 6 million years ago, and coming up to Homo sapiens 200,000 years ago to the present, and drawn in a rather, what should we say, semi-humorous way, with reconstructions of facial features and hair and eyes and all of that sort of thing. So evolution, the human story, it's called. And we get a good deal of this sort of thing in the media. Thinking about DNA and the human genome, that is the human DNA, has recently been decoded, though it's not yet fully understood. It contains about 3 billion base pairs. A base pair would be a nucleotide and its complementary nucleotide, so the two link together, and then these form a chain, and the chain can be taken apart, and the nucleotides on one side link up again to their complementary pairs and reduplicate the chain. So about 3 billion of these in the human genome, and it's claimed that the human genome is about 98% the same as the genome of the chimpanzee. Here's the cover of a book by Jonathan Marks, What It Means to Be 98% Chimpanzee, Apes, People, and Their Genes. What's our response to this? Are we going to say, well, yes, humans must have evolved after all? Well, let's start with the DNA. Let's also suppose for the moment that the 98% figure is correct. Then we must have 2% change in the 5 million years to get from chimp to humans. So here's that chart again that we saw before, and we bring up a little round circle, red circle, to show you where the branch is made between the chimps on the left and the line running over to the Homo sapiens on the right. We note on this diagram that the chimp one has no branches, but the one going to Homo sapiens has lots of branches, and some have wondered why that's so. And in fact, there was a book written some years ago called The Monkey Puzzle, which suggested that, in fact, the chimpanzee descends from some of these over on the other branch on this particular diagram. We're not going to get into that. We must have 2% change in 5 million years to get from chimp to humans. Well, that would be a 1% change in each branch, the human branch and the chimp branch. 1% of 3 billion base pairs is 30 million base pairs. Divide that by 5 million years and we get 6 base pairs per year. This means that 6 base pairs in the genome leading to humans have to be changed each year, and all these incorporated into the whole population. The effective population size of the members running up this human branch is estimated to be about 10,000 at each point. Mutation rate at about, as for all the higher animals, the more complicated cell type, mutation rate is 10 to the minus 8 mutation per nucleotide per generation, and the generation time is 5 to 10 years. So in 5 million years, we get about 3 times 10 to the 11 mutations, which sounds like plenty, huh? But that was scattered through the whole population of 10,000 individuals in each of 1 million generations. So how many of these mutations survive and spread to the whole population and thus characterize the final population of humans? To survive and spread, mutations typically need to be beneficial. If they're harmful, the mutations tend to be eliminated. If they're neutral, they only spread by a random walk, which is a very, very slow process. Well, let's think about the distinctive anatomical features that distinguish ape from human. Bramble and Lieberman count 16 features which appear first in the Homo lineage. We show 6 of them over here on the right, and this involves the top one. There we have the human column on the left and the great ape column on the right. The first step, it's not the first step, but the first of these 6 features, is relocating the foramen magnum. This is the hole in the bottom of the skull that the spinal column comes through. And in humans, it's under the center of the skull, balanced, if you like. Whereas in the great apes, it's back on the back part of the skull. And so that has to be relocated in the shift to upright posture. We also introduce spinal curvature. The great apes, which are knuckle walkers, have a straighter spine than humans do. Human spine is curved so as to be able to stand balanced upright on 2 feet. The rib cage is restructured, and you can see in the diagram there the great ape rib structure is rather cone-shaped, wide at the bottom there at the top, and the human structure is more barrel-shaped, if you like. It's broad at the middle, a little narrower at the bottom, and a little narrower at the top. The pelvis needs to be reshaped, and we see the pictures here of that, again, related to walking upright, and so we show those here. And then the lower limbs need to be altered for the human to bring the limbs under the pelvis, whereas for the great apes, they are kind of spread out, straddling it, or bow-legged almost, not quite bow-legged, but spread out, because the human needs to have his or her feet under the body for balance, and the great ape does not. And then the foot is restructured. We're all familiar with the fact that the apes have a foot that looks rather like our hand, with an opposable thumb, if you like, and the human foot does not. Human foot is structured for walking, and the ape foot is structured for grasping limbs and such in its climbing. Well, each of these features surely required a number of mutations in order to get the way they are. Well, that then raises the problem of getting coordinated changes, not just random mutations, but mutations that all fit together. Gauger and Axe have shown that to get 7 coordinated mutations, even in a bacterial population, would take an enormous 10 to the 27th years. That's a billion, billion, billion years, with the age of the universe only, 13.7 billion years. And this is something then like a 100 million billion times longer than that. And bacteria have populations of billions. Human populations have only reached billions recently, and generally thought that they're down in the 10,000 range for most of this transition. And bacteria reproduce with thousands of generations per year, but the population of humans in this suggested evolutionary scheme would be perhaps only 5 to 10 years. It would be something like 5 to 10 years apiece. So that no way these changes are going to occur in a few million years. We come back to this question, do we have 98% similarity with the apes? This number is a little bit like the claim that all of Shakespeare's in the dictionary. It ignores the location of the various words and the syntax, how they fit together and such. when one looks at the DNA that is in chimps but not in humans, and the DNA that is in humans but not in chimps, the number similarity number drops to about 70%. This became apparent when the whole chimp genome was deciphered. What about junk DNA? The presence of large amounts of DNA in the human genome, which doesn't code for proteins, was initially seen as junk, and it looked like perhaps only about 2% of the human genome coded for proteins, and the rest was coding with junk, huh? And that this was evidence that humans and life itself were not designed, but the result of random changes. Both Francis Collins and Kenneth Miller, theistic evolutionists, make a great deal of this in their books on this question, and claim that God, who exists, did not design humans, but let chance do so. Richard Dawkins agrees with them that chance did so, but leaves out God. Is it really junk? Or by 2002, which is before either Collins or Miller wrote, Richard Sternberg had noted there was considerable evidence that junk DNA was functioning in the cell in ways other than coding for proteins. These functions include numerous control activities of various sorts, to turning on and turning off various things, and what order things should be done, and such as that. The ENCODE project, more recently, and then after that, more recent work, suggests that most DNA is used in one way or another. So now from, 98% junk, it surely, if there is any junk, is way under 50%. Here's a chart I got off the internet, and I'm not sure this is showing what we're interested in here, but it's showing lots of the different uses of different parts of the DNA, and the unclassified part is down here about 23.6%. A second genetic code. It's been known for a long time that the cell often processes its DNA in a very strange way, by cutting the DNA into pieces, which are then spliced together in various ways before being used. It now appears that there's some sort of splicing code which gives the cell great diversity of function. These codes differ substantially between species. How did they get there? Some conclusions at this point. Life in general, and humans in particular, seem to be very cleverly designed, even without taking the intellectual and spiritual differences between humans and apes into account. It now appears that the development of life over the history of the Earth looks more like what we're learning to do in genetic engineering than it does like unguided process. And we're going to suggest this as we move on from here. What about Adam? One problem in fitting the evidence from nature with that of Scripture is the question, where does Adam fit into the chronology of the fossil record? Is Adam rather recent, as some young Earth creationists and some old Earth creationists say? Or is he further back, as other old Earth creationists suggests? Well, here we show with the standard scheme for hominins, a little different chart than before. And up here at the top are the Homo group, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo neanderthalis, Homo sapiens, etc. And down here, a little before 3 million years, is Australopithecus afarensis, or Lucy. And you can see the branch running there, these square boxes running horizontally from Lucy across a ways and then turning vertically and going up to the Homos. And that's the suggested evolutionary pathway, if you like. And below that, at about 5.5 million years, you can see a similar branching running from the earlier anthropoid apes across and coming up to the Australopithecines. One old Earth creationist I know puts Adam back at 5 million years with the appearance of the Australopithecines, and another puts Adam all the way up at only 5,000 BC, just before the historical period begins, and about 4,000 years after the archaeologically suggested date for Jericho. We have a chart to illustrate Homo versus pre-Homo, and we have six figures on here labeled A, B, C, D, E, F. A and C, in the upper row with the first two, are human, modern human, front and back showing basically the skeleton with a little bit of muscle shown there. B and D, right below it, are the same for the modern chimp, skeleton and a little bit of musculature in front and back. And then E, upper right, is Homo erectus, and F, lower right, is Australopithecus afarensis, Lucy. And what we see here are two distinct body plans, what we might call the human-like body plan in the top row and the ape-like body plan in the lower row. Well, what about Adam then? We're looking at the standard hominin phylogeny again that we looked at before. It seems to me that Adam would have had a human-like body plan rather than ape-like, but I don't know any way to guarantee that. If Adam is even Homo habilis, which has a human-like body plan, he could still go back 2.5 million years. See the red ellipse there that encompasses the Homo habilis timeline and also the picture of the skull. This seems much too far back to be consistent with the Genesis genealogies. The same problem faces Homo erectus, here a new chart, turned around sideways so that the dates run from the right present back to leftward back to about 3 million years ago. And the blue bar is the Homo habilis, and we said the problem with that, too far back, we thought. And Homo erectus, the green bar, also seems to be too far back, about 2 million years down to about 300,000 years. We have to the right of them below the archaic Homo sapiens, about 0.3 million to 0.1 million, that's about 300,000 to about 100,000. And then below that, the Neanderthal, 80,000 to 30,000, and then anatomically modern human, about 125,000 to the present. Well, eliminating Homo habilis and Homo erectus, this leaves Neanderthal and Homo sapiens, which range from 10 to over 100,000 years back. This is where most evangelicals place Adam. Within these parameters, there's two abrupt changes. At about 130,000 years before the present, we have the appearance of anatomically modern humans. And then at about 40,000 years before the present, we have the explosion of culture, perhaps most strikingly seen in the cave paintings in France, where colored, sophisticated drawings of animals and such appear. Others have suggested even more recent dates for Adam, but these face the problem then of dealing with pre-Adamite humans. Some earlier evangelicals back in the 19th and early 20th centuries, in fact, did go with pre-Adamite humans and felt they were destroyed in the destruction of the earth that took place with Satan's rebellion. And then Adam is the human of the new development that God makes a new creation at that point. You see that in the old Scofield Reference Bible. And that's a characteristic of one version of the gap restitution theories. What about pre-Adamites? Well, in any case, we have something that looks rather human that was able to construct tools and even use fire before these 130,000 and 40,000 dates. How do we deal with those? Well, on this genetic engineering view I suggested for the development of life, this would suggest that God or his angels made preparatory models before God put his image in humans. And so we see some of these preparatory models that are not human in the biblical sense, though they might perfectly well be human in anthropological sense of some sort, and we don't have time machines to be able to go back and interview any of these. Conclusions then, this is where we are at this point. It looks to me like God inserted an individual, but this individual looked rather like beings already living at this time, but that God put his image in this being, and he became the progenitor of the human race. For further reading on the origin of humans, the three I would suggest here are John Bloom's On Human Origins, a Survey, in the Christian Scholars Review of 1997. Ann Galger, Douglas Axe, and Casey Luskin, Science and Human Origins, Discovery Institute, 2012. And Fazali Rana, with Hugh Ross, Who Was Adam? Nav Press, 2005. John Bloom's a colleague, now the director of the Master's Program for Christianity and Science out at Biola University, and Galger, Douglas Axe, and Casey Luskin are associated with Discovery Institute in Seattle, and Fazali Rana and Hugh Ross are associated with Reasons to Believe in California. Well, that's the end so far, and we will keep watching what's going on. Thank you for your attention, and that's our presentation.